Today I brought along our principal record manager from FACTS, Michael King, who's been, you know, a constant support and a wonderful guiding hand in this process. We have who we call our man with the minister's office, Jason Cavell, who works in the MAPS area of FACTS. They were a very, very crucial element in this, and they were in fact spearheaded our e-approval application, which he will talk about. And Chris Leeming, who ran a lot of the communications and training for us, and also did the change. I felt that it was good that you hear from, you know, a range of people. Bit of fun first off. We chose the theme Mission Possible because this program, many people, you know, doubted whether or not it could be done, because there was significant process change, administrative change, cultural change, record keeping change, not to mention, you know, enormous technical change. And so we sort of thought, when we spoke to you about a year ago, a bit tongue in cheek, you know, let's do that. Well, I can say quite happily that we're 3 days in to having accomplished that mission. And when I say 3 days in, we migrated the last set of records into OneTrim, and all staff are now working in OneTrim across OneFacts. And so we're somewhat pleased and a very relieved program director. So what I wanted to cover today was the background of the situation at the beginning of the task, because sometimes we forget where we have come from. And I think sometimes to move forward, you know, history matters. We need to honour the past and all the work over those years that enabled us to get to really where we were. I wanted to go through the proposed solution and the major tasks, and to give you some idea of the implementation plan and the critical deliverables. Here I want you to understand the scale of what we had to cope with, and the way through that was always team, partnering and collaboration. Whenever I got concerned, I called a colleague. Whenever I needed help, sometimes those colleagues were in other agencies. I'm sure most of you know Abdullah from education. Wonderful support, incredibly wise, experienced, digital record keeper. Whenever we reached out across the sectors, there were other colleagues who assisted from time to time, and Sarah would always know, you know, who to call. I'd encourage you, when you're working on these projects, if you've got a concern or a problem or an issue, put your hand up and ask for some support, because it'll be there. So, you know, reach out. I want to talk about what we learnt. The journey was great. Every day we learnt something. We learnt from each other. We learnt from the sector. We learnt from the users. There wasn't a day when we didn't learn, you know, something. I wanted my colleagues to talk to you about a couple of case studies. Training and change are vital. The steering committee was passionate about training and support for the users. We spent a significant amount of money on training, and Chris will give you some idea of the scale. I can't tell you how important it is to empower those users and bring them along. It's really quite pointless rolling out a gorgeous system that nobody can use. And that's what I would call waste of time. The mini app was critical. This poor little vehicle, this poor little app that was a little XE that sits on Trim, and all the records are in Trim, we thought would be used by 250 people. After we trained 2,500, talked to Chris about this, we understood the size and the importance of that. When I spoke to you about that early on, I said it was a case study to understand how we could work together in FACTS and what it would take to join business processes across six former agencies with an automated approval workflow in real time. Jason is a hardened survivor of that process, and you know, one that went well. The record manager's perspective. Michael King and State Records were constant companions for us on this journey. They were always, you know, giving advice and linking us back to the touch point of, you know, why we were doing this and what we needed to support. And I thought it was important that you hear from the principal records manager in FACTS, because I'm not a records manager. I have enormous respect for you, and I hope I've learned a little bit, but I won't pretend, you know. So I think it's important to hear from your colleague. And then the critical risks to manage. You know, what kept me awake at night? And I had pretty good nights, actually. There was one that I might share with you that was a little interesting. But I think it's really important to start with the end in mind, but to understand the risks that you need to manage. I always said to the business advisory group and the tech groups and all the users, if anything concerns you, call me, email me. We had a OneTrim email box. We'll always pay attention. And we set up constant dialogue. Because if everybody's watching and everybody's helping, you're going to catch those risks. Really, really important. So what was the background? So one trim was a really critical delivery deliverable for OneFacts so that OneFacts could function. We brought together, you know, six former agencies. A couple of them are very large. They're all significant agencies, but we're talking the social housing in New South Wales, the management of the housing asset, you know, with LAC, the Child Protection Agency, you know, community services, Business Link, a very large former, you know, shared service provider, the Aboriginal Housing Office, and you know, some smaller, the Ageing, Disability and Home Care group. So we're talking about, you know, agencies that supported the most vulnerable people in the state and provided services to them, and they all had their own dedicated processes and their own dedicated systems, and how could they all work together as one? OneFacts, you know, we had we joined together those operating districts into one. They were all in one office, but on six different trims. It's called, you know, can you imagine? It was so tough for our staff. So it's absolutely critical that we get this across the line. The move to manage information as a critical asset. So as you would know, FACTS, like other agencies, is moving from a situation of being the direct service provider to being either the manager of outsourced services, or indeed in some instances a more of a regulatory sort of role. As you move away from direct service provision to an outsourced provider, the management of information becomes absolutely critical, much more so than when you're, you know, in the direct service provision sphere. So that became, you know, really, really important. Information governance, absolutely critical, and became a focus of FACTS ICT governance and indeed corporate governance in FACTS. It was also important to address recommendations from previous reviews of record keeping. They started in about 2001. There were reviews by Ombudsman, the Auditor General, several Royal Commissions, Woods Royal Commission twice. And they all said the same thing. You need to move away from paper records. You need to move to digital records. The system needs to be searchable, easy to use, and the staff need to be trained. Sounds reasonable. We need to improve and streamline legislative compliance. With six different systems, all configured differently, six different logins and sign-ons, everything about them was different. You know, it was difficult to be sure we were capturing everything and perhaps not capturing multiple times. If we look at the other driver at the time, it was at the time of the implementation of the three principles, which is, if you like, almost a paradigm shift, as I understand it, in record keeping. And you would understand that better than I. So move to managing records within a framework where responsibility is clearly assigned. That was absolutely adopted by FACTS in one trim. A move to where records management supports the business. We tried to meld in this program a conversation and then a series of strategic conversations across the organisation at every level and in geographically dispersed areas, sometimes linking by teleconference, video conference, phone, sometimes going out and visiting, so that we linked up the business requirements really closely with the record keeping requirements, and we moved away from a polarisation of those two things and we tried to join them in the system. The key to that in every instance was simplify where possible. Simplify, streamline and unify. And having well-managed records. How complex is this in FACTS, where many of the records, certainly in the child protection space, need to be kept as permanent retention? Very, very, very complex situation at a time of this massive paradigm shift. What was that trim landscape? If you take a bit of a look at that slide, you'll see we actually had six trim databases. We had almost 3,000 users who had to access three or more of them. I had six of them just to do my job. We had another 7,000 users who used at least one system. For the technical support, it was so complex because you might call someone in the technical area, they might know one or two of the systems, probably not six. The architecture was on-premise and shared. They were primarily Oracle databases on Unix boxes. Inconsistent schemas. Everything that you could think about that could be different was different. When we mapped the business classification schemes back to GA28 at the admin level, 10,000 rows on an Excel spreadsheet, just to give you some idea. So it wasn't a delight, really. So what did we move to? What we have now is a single instance, which is HP RM8.3. We moved from 7.1.2, which had been out of support since March 2014, which is just a little while ago, So now all users simply use one trim for one fax. We do have one data set, which is the ATIC data set, which when the transition to the new environment disability service provision has completed, will move to be a legacy data set. And the decision was made not to incorporate those records into one trim because they'd only be there for, you know, 12 months and we'd have to move them out. Some of the records that are truly fax records, an example of those is the Disability Council, will move into one trim. So you can see it's a much simpler diagram. Our staff now come to work and they click on Records Manager once. You know, our technical team only need to understand one system. We have one business classification scheme, not six. So what were the key tasks? Consolidate the existing systems to a single data set. Sounds simple. Oh, it wasn't. We had six agencies, but we had seven policies, records management policies when I arrived, because the seventh was in draft, trying to bring them all together. Of course, with the seven, take it six, we had, you know, six sets of guidelines, six sets of business rules, six business classification schemes, six designs, six setups. It was, we had 160 record types, all completely different, all with completely different permissions. Workflow was used in some, not in others, and of course, when it was used, they were all different. I have no idea how poor human beings who had to work across streams before one trim did their job. I have no idea. Upgrade to a level of software that will provide substantially enhanced functionality. So we went from 7.1.2 to 8.3. That in itself was interesting because we had to do a back-end upgrade via 7.3 to get to 8.3. So it was actually a double upgrade because there's a substantial back-end difference between 7.1.2, 7.3 and 8.3. So there were two technical transitions that, of course, all had to happen on a weekend. We migrated over 40 million records into a single data set. Now, that sounds easy. It wasn't too bad with the smaller data sets. When we got to housing, you know, it's a bit of a trick. 20 million records, over 60 record types, incredibly complex. That's the oldest data set. They've used workflows and approvals for a long time. They did 100,000 actions in 1 week when we did the Delta migrations, to give you some idea. Of course, we migrated the notes. I mean, everything came across. It was interesting. Improved the records management framework and support. We reviewed everything from the FRIDAs down, you know, so everything you could imagine was reviewed. Sarah helped us with changes to, I think it was 303, the social housing FRIDA. And that was for LAC and for Aboriginal Housing Office to make sure that it was up to date with its with the functions that were in those agencies. We built the capability of over 10,000 users and transitioned them into one trim. When we started training, some of the users hadn't had training since their system had been rolled out. So they might have had a little bit, but not systematic. There was some online training available, but, you know, not a lot. We established a consolidated platform that could move to as a service model. There was a decision made early on to basically clean it up in-house, get it onto a single platform before moving to as a service. The agency was appropriately concerned to make sure that no information would be lost and that it was managed in the process, so that, you know, we wanted to do it within fax, and to leverage the improved user experience to drive up use. The program didn't have as a requirement even a need to bring on an additional user. We certainly did, but we didn't have that as a requirement because it was thought enough to do to, you know, consolidate and upgrade. A little bit of a look at the implementation plan. Analysis and design. Really, if I could say to you, please plan. When you add value to a project is at the beginning. If you're halfway through and you want to change something, it's a really big ask. So really, it's analysis and design. I couldn't emphasise that enough. And certainly you see the build there overlaps because you start doing things and so there's a bit of a feedback loop, you know, there with the users and with how that's working. That build new environment looks really simple. Oh, it so wasn't simple. So at one time, we of course had all of the environments. So training, config, prod, DR for the six data sets, all on Oracle. We moved to a SQL always on platform. For redundancy failover capability, because we have two data centres. So should one trim go down in one data centre, there's an automatic failover capability to our other data centre. We used up at one time over 100 terabytes of storage because of the need to keep various databases operating when we moved. We used over 25 servers going 24 hours a day since last October to migrate all of the records. And we moved to, we built our one trim DR, one trim prod, one trim config, one trim training within a Citrix client environment. I could not stress how clever our technical staff were. I'd say to them, look, the thing is, we've got five data sets on seven, one's going to eight. Some of those users that are going to eight need to access all of the seven. Some only need to access one of the seven. And by the way, some of them need to use MiniApp, which is on seven but works across the agencies. So you need to do that for me. They just look at me and say, oh, Anne. And I said, look, you can do it. And somehow they did. I understand that that's actually very technically complex. The application remediation was really all about understanding the code in all of the existing systems and whether or not we could migrate without having to change that to the new systems. Very complex. We didn't end up doing a cleanse and a move at stage four. What we decided to do was to bring all of the records across, and we bought 25 terabytes of control point to run over one trim at the end to identify the duplicate records, which Michael King will have the joyful task of working through with the business. The migration was a very significant task, and I cannot stress with you how important it is to get a really good migration sync tool and to screenshot everything in sight to make sure that you bring every record with you. The training needs analysis was vital, and Chris will talk about the training delivery. The go-live was extensive because we moved the CS data set first, and I'll talk about that in the transition stages, and housing was the last one that we moved actually this Monday. Post-go-live support continues. The little darkness on the arrows at the end, we went 5% over time and 5% over budget, which I think is, I'm actually pretty pleased. Steering committee's pretty pleased. Sally can attest to that. So what were some of the critical deliverables? The program mobilisation and setup, the analysis, the guidelines, the disposal authorities, the single ministerial record type, which was the app, the standardisation, the business analysis. We ran 35 workshops across the state, attended by almost 400 staff. We did 10 deep dives of critical processes, extensive reports in that analysis. The change management and the training, Chris will talk about. The technical designs, very detailed designs through all of the FACS approval processes, because we have 146 applications working in FACS, and we have to make sure that any one application, like one trim, doesn't break any other application, which might be the child protection system or a range of other, the finance systems, SAP. The SAP trim integration tool, all of the upgrades and the migration. These other things are just some minor tidy-ups that we're about to program close at the end of this, end of April. Some of the deliverables that I'll just scroll through the screen, these are by no means all, but just to give you some idea of scale. So the RM policies and guidelines, the change and communication strategies and plans. We didn't just have one. We had a change strategy for the program, but every data set needed its own change and communications plan because different users used them in different locations and for different reasons. The training manuals, we had three main ones, I think, the user manual, the super user manual, and the e-approval manual. In addition to that, we had a range of e-learning modules. Some of those, for instance, the search one has 17 sub-modules. They're fully interactive. We went with a sort of a more generic approach so that they had a longer shelf life, so specific enough for users to use, but not so highly specified that if you change a dot point, you need to change the e-learning. The technical design documentation, I couldn't stress enough how important it is, and the testing and validation. Not one set of testing and validation. We had to test and validate every data set, every migration, every upgrade. Some of the test scripts were over 120 pages long. We had users working weekends on those, and they were wonderful. In terms of the learnings, what I would say to you is governance is incredibly critical. We had a fabulous steering committee. It was always chaired by a member of the FACS board with representation across FACS. The Business Advisory Group had a representative from every division in FACTS, approved by the FACTS Board. The Technical Advisory Group had a representative from every critical technical area, including information security management, which is vital, and of course our Principal Records Manager. Sarah was on every committee. We had about 550 super users across the state and 330 change agents who worked with us to support us endlessly. We had massive sponsorship and engagement. How important is this? Let's talk about one simple thing we changed, the security management policy in TRIM for an agency like FACTS. So, of course, all of the TRIMs had their own security policies, right down to, you know, how should, which records should be locked, which records should be open, who should see those records, how should all of that be managed. So how do you have those conversations so that users will agree to change? You need this sort of governance, so that we actually had a subcommittee which looked specifically at policy, which the users trusted those people, and we linked them up with this sort of governance. When the steering committee got it, their question to me was always, Anne, has this been to the bag? Because we understood that those bag representatives were fabulous. They were like the canary in the mine, you know, because they get noisy if they're not happy. Believe it or not, we're almost undone by numbering. I mean, I have to tell you, I'm not an expert in records numbering choices. But you see, we had six different approaches, and it came down to two, and we somehow got there. But Jason can nod, and they'll recall the day when I was somewhat not the happiest program director in Sydney. But we got there. So for complex things, you need great governance. Engagement is everything. That steering committee, that governance we used to death. We endlessly went out. There was a January when Michael King and I, we used to call it Peace and Love Are Here to Talk to You. So, you know, tell us all your issues, tell us all your concerns. We'll stay till we've heard. We went to see one of our key people in Parramatta, and she wrote me an email afterwards, and she said, Anne, I couldn't believe that you stayed and listened to me until you heard all of my concerns and you and Michael understood them. And that was what we did. You know, whenever anyone was concerned, we went out, we sat down with them, and we listened. And sometimes our super users needed to do this because, you know, I had 10,000 users at least. But it's really, really, really important. Engagement is everything. If you lose a district, if a district isn't engaged, what if it's southeastern Sydney? What if it's western Sydney? What if it's the west of the state with their really complex issues? You can't. You can't lose them. User acceptance testing. How are you going to get people to test on a Sunday at 6 o'clock at night? For Jane, was it 6 hours?
One day was 6 hours. Obviously with multiple testing. I think I sent you an email that went, can we stop now?
You did, and I said no. Because we were sorting through problems, which you do on a go-live, you know, weekend. So you really do want that. Transition order is key. I would suggest to you, when you think about how you're going to transition six data sets and upgrade them, think about managing your users' concerns. My CS users, very worried about security, very worried, you know, very concerned. You have to keep sponsorship on board, so you need some quick wins. I wouldn't do a big bang all at the end. What if it didn't work? Enable continuous delivery and build support, which helps you consolidate and build engagement. Manage the risk. So in your transition order, build in some knowledge, build in some skill, build acceptance and support. We went from the smallest databases to the biggest database. Smallest number of users, biggest number of users. In the middle, the most complex. So one weekend we did FACTS, Business Link, Mini App, and CS. AHO. Yeah, so that was complex, but perhaps I think there was only 4,000 users that weekend. So migration is a challenge. There are technical challenges and user challenges. The technical challenges, you can't have 712 and 8.3 on the same machine. So you have to build different environments. And you have to work out through your client layer, through the Citrix layer, how your users can work in multi-environments and not have incredible pain. Somehow we did that. You know, user challenges. I'm now on 8.3 because I'm ATIC, but MiniApp is still on 7, and I still have to use FACTS, which is on 7. How hard is that for me, and how long can I keep you in that environment? The answer is 4 weeks max. You try to keep it to 2. And so we tried to plan the rollout so that we got people to the same environment as quickly as possible, and so that nobody was in two environments for more than 2 weeks. That was That was sort of the goal. We thought 4 weeks would be the absolute, you know, you'd be pushing up against user ability to cope in quite a stressed, busy environment. What are the options? Do you move the processes? MiniApp's an example of a process upgrade. Organisational unit can't do it, because if I'm on 8 in any part of FACTS, but I need to communicate to someone who's too hard. Big bang approach. We didn't think this was a good idea. We thought it was a little bit risky. And I don't actually know how you would do it and keep business continuity on that go-live weekend, because there's no way you could migrate the Delta, that many Deltas on a weekend. So we went a phased approach, which was an agency approach. So we'd upgrade and migrate on a weekend. Regardless of the strategy, unless a big bang's taken, your users are working in multiple data sets during the transition phase and you want them on board. This is a run sheet. So all of our go-live weekends had run sheets. What I would say to you is the critical thing about migration is, however you work it out, if you want to ensure business continuity, you've only got a weekend. And even then, if you're working with social housing across the state, you have to take them down for a minimum of 3 hours on a Friday. You can give them read-only, but you have to take them down. It's a trick. Timing is everything on that weekend. I think we're now at Chris.
Thanks, Anne. Good afternoon. So I'm going to talk about training and communication. So Ian highlighted how big of a change this was in a technical sense, but all around, wrapped around that, is the people, because people make the changes happen, and the change is happening to people. So through that is individual change, and the model we used was the ADCAR model to help people through that change, which is about building their awareness for the need to change, increasing their desire to change, building their knowledge and their ability, and then finally reinforcement of that change to help them continue on those new practices. So training and communication tackled those things, and that's what I'm going to talk about today. So the communication component. And this tackles, the communication tackles the awareness and the desire for people to change. What we tried to do was direct, targeted, relevant communications with direct human contact wherever possible. So the groups that we had to do that, we had our change partners and our change champions, and we had webinars with those on a regular basis. We had our super user webinars, so when we got those people engaged, we got them engaged early. We had our pre-go-live webinars for each of our go-lives, so people getting the relevant information just in time before they when they needed it. We did pre-go-live site visits, and that's part of that human connection, so making sure we touch base with everybody we humanly could do possible. We had on-site support for any of our go-lives in all of those key business area with the biggest user groups and the high-volume critical users. We had our OneTrim intranet page. So there was always a site where people could keep up to date with the latest information about the program and the project. We had targeted emails. So we didn't just send out emails to everybody all at once. We looked at what user group is affected right now or about to be affected, and we targeted them and them only. For example, I was talking to Jason this morning, and there were some users that didn't even know we did the last rollover over the weekend because they weren't impacted. So we didn't just blast everybody with every bit of information. We had the OneTrim email address, so we're always open for people to come and contact us, and that channel was always there. And we didn't have any generic newsletters, because again, our idea was direct, targeted, and relevant comms. So we didn't just blast out on a weekly or monthly basis, here's another newsletter, here's another newsletter, here's another newsletter. Most of our stuff, we did email, a lot of our stuff was through webinars, so they could actually talk to a person and ask the questions about what's about to happen to them this coming week, this weekend with that migration. From a training perspective, what did we have? So we had on-demand training resources. So we had our manuals, guides, simulations, e-courses. So people got access to the information when they needed it. We had our super users, and I can't tell you how valuable these people were. We had, I think, 550 super users. So that put people on the ground with the end users. So there was somebody in their office that was there with them to help. And the super users were involved quite early in the piece and got their training quite early too. face-to-face training for super users and our critical high-volume user groups. So wherever we could, we did face-to-face training. And I'll go through the stats in a moment. Webinars. Lots and lots of webinars. Again, it's just too expensive to be face-to-face with everybody, and there's just too many people. And the geographic challenges that we have, people from all around the state, so we really tapped into the webinar resource there. And we had the learning path, so people could identify where do I sit and where do I need to go with my learning and what is that path. So some of the stats, so face-to-face training, we delivered to 651 users. We webinars, we had three of the main webinars for the main topics. Working with RM8, so basically that was your introduction. And we did 1,812 people there. Searching in Records Manager, 1,317 people. And creating and editing in Records Manager, 1,204 people. With the e-learning, we had the same three courses. And so the idea behind the design of that, those e-learning courses exactly matched the content that we had in the webinars. So people had choice about the way they wanted to learn. Do I want to tap into a webinar where I can talk to a human being and get that information live? Or do I want to sit back and do some self-paced learning at the point in time when I'm ready to learn and how I want to do it? Yeah, so that's what we did there. So that's some of the numbers. If you added up all the basic courses that we wanted to get across, we touched 57.5% of people doing those things. That doesn't include all the other webinars for all the individual go-lives. So, for example, the housing go-live this weekend. Prior to that, there was a separate set of individuals that were impacted there. So we ran 41 sessions with 433 attendees that attended those, plus all our site visits. So we're giving that unique group of people their unique information that's relevant to them directly before their migration that just happened over the weekend. So that's some information on the training that we delivered for the One Trim program. I'll hand over to Jason.
Thanks, Chris. My case study is about the process that I'm involved in, which is the... I work for the Ministerial and Correspondence Unit. We've undergone various name changes, but we tend to do the same kind of function, and most agencies tend to have, especially large agencies, have a similar function. The nexus point of the organisation, which communicates with the minister and with our senior executive, and then registers, tracks, and filters out that information to the rest of the organisation. Now, I've been thinking that a comparison has been made to that we're kind of like the United Nations of facts, because the UN has six official working languages, just like the six official systems that we used to run. So, and having to translate and communicate between those was a key part of what we did. So in order to make OneTrim work, we were chosen as a test site. And what it meant was that it was basically the first step in the journey. We had to start somewhere. This was the place where we started, because in a microcosm, we could reach out to all parts of the organisation. We could test what was really going on. We could bring together multiple processes, because Anne's already listed and exhaustively gone through how widespread that variation was, into a single process, and a common platform with a single record type in a single data set. And that was moving from 14 or so different record types across six data sets, which for trying to actually manage in terms of everyday operation just added an extraordinary layer of complexity to everything we did. And at the same time, we're looking at a common workflow tool for many users who'd never used any kind of workflow at all, or where the workflow was ad hoc, based on local solutions, but there was no common platform where any part of the organisation could talk to any other part of the organisation. So that was quite radical. And it was looking at an industry standard EDRM system for all ministerial and executive records that was capable of handling all of them, not just capturing some, not just capturing the select few that happened to come to our notice, but all of them. That was the purpose. And also, in an organisation which deals with a human services organisation, where a lot of the information we have is inherently sensitive, we have vulnerable clients, vulnerable families, vulnerable children. We kept coming up against these two problems of security, that we had records that were locked down to two or three people and nobody else in the organisation could see them, even if they needed to. Or saying, well, that's too hard, so we'll just make it, we'll open it up to everyone, which has its own challenges and problems. So then, through the MINIAP experience, and MINIAP, I'll just briefly mention because Anne has alluded to it, MINIAP is simply our workflow tool. It's a separate application. Anne said it's a Windows XE, so it works, but everything is stored in OneTrim. So that's the basis. So it manages workflow, manages security. The single test case that we had was proof that we could actually do it. That we'd actually bring all these multiple processes together within a contained or knowable environment, not the sort of completely unknowable and extent of everything in the organisation, and that we could manage the cultural change. And I went into this process thinking the technical change would be the real challenge, but in fact it was the culture that got us every time, because we were dealing with not only the cultures of different organisations. We had a housing culture, a community services, child protection culture, we had other small cultures around the place, ageing disability culture. We also had the centre versus the regions culture. We had head office, policy making, and we had the districts, which the further away they tended to be, the more that culture was distinct. So managing all of that. Oh, we also won an award. It was in 2016, we won HP Software Innovation Award. So that was gratifying, the process, and full tribute to Anne for leading that. We helped build the Guiding Coalition. And that Guiding Coalition, the idea that we're all in this together, this isn't just about something that one part of the organisation does, but that everyone's got a stake in it, and that we got a quick win. So by actually showing that we could do a way of talking across facts, that we could all work together, a platform, a common platform that we'd never had before, and we could actually use that momentum. And speaking from my perspective, what we got out of having a single record type, a single workflow process, we got all those advantages of greater accountability, clear responsibility, and visibility, so we actually see where everything was. I remember the times where, you know, you had to search through at least three or four different systems to try and work out where the current version was at, and then you had to actually find out and ring a bunch of people so you could find out who might know, who knows where this thing is. It was colossally complicated. And out of that also, the result is we had much better data. We couldn't measure things accurately before. We were having to take, you know, snapshot. My case study is about the process shots in all of our data sets, different counting rules, and we had no idea what we were talking about. So we actually got business intelligence out of this, which has been one of the most exciting things that has come. And that we're now managing security in a dynamic fashion. And security is always, you know, it's a constant challenge and a constant process. We're learning, but we have made great progress in managing that. So thank you very much. I'll hand over to Michael King, the Principal Records Manager.
Thanks, Jason. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm your Principal Records Manager for FACS, which is a first FACS, just as we now have a OneTrim for FACS. And I just wanted to quickly thank OneTrim. As part of this program starting in 2015, my arrival in late 2015, we had to look at everything. Everything had to be checked. If you're going to be using RM8, let's make sure everything is good in RM8. We had to look at our retention and disposal authorities, of which we had several. We had six policies with one draft. We now have a FACS policy for the first time ever. We had many BCS systems with enormous issues around analysis of them. I have some work to do now that we have OneTrim to sort out duplications, multiplications, representations, all sorts of interesting stuff. We finally have records management and record keeping guidelines. Again, we had so many different types of guidelines. And some of our agencies go back a long way. Community services goes back 200 years. Housing goes back 130 years. We had lots and lots and lots and lots of different things. And as Jason said, going out in the districts, they had developed their own local systems. We have business rules incorporated into training, and one of the great achievements of the One TRIM project program was we had training to go with it. It's all right to have the fantastic tool, and I've seen this in other agencies, but no one's ever been trained in it. No one actually knows how to use it. So we've covered a lot of territory in a quick time. Induction training. Everyone wanted induction training. People come to FACTS with a lot of skills that come from other agencies or other businesses that have very good systems. The first thing they were told when they came to FACTS is, oh, we don't actually make records. And I thought, well, actually, you probably make some very important records. And then they were shown all the various different types of rules you could use. Just, you know, pick a set of rules you want to use. So the training fits in with e-learning. The e-learning has gone very well. There was a very good training subcommittee. My compliments to them. They worked very hard, and they brought it all together, again, into one environment. So you're part of one FACTS, and you have this one e-learning environment you can work in. And people like it. I've had a lot of feedback. When we go out and visit people, they say, it's actually really good. It's really simple, and it works very well. And they feel it's talking to them. It's relating to them. It's not something coming out of head office. Because FACTS doesn't have head office anymore. We are a totally distributed agency. We have the monitoring regime in place. The policy, first policy ever. I'm reviewing it at the moment. Our policies are now reviewed every year. And it links in with our information management policy and our information management principles. That's where we now consider, in fact, information is an asset. 2 years ago, people were saying to me, oh, Michael, we don't keep records. Now they're contacting me saying, Michael, we're keeping records. We're keeping state records. Let's manage them. So we've been storing stuff for 200 years. Now we're really starting to manage it much better. Monitoring and control is in place because in the past, you had your TRIM. You were using your TRIM, and then you were using the office TRIM to put the same thing in. So we can now monitor, and your indicators register is ready to roll. So senior staff can see that people are using RM8 and that they are, at this stage, we're producing quite a lot of documents a week now, aren't we? The numbers are going up and up and up. Our retention and archiving, now that we have got people understanding it, and I want to borrow a phrase from Catherine Robinson, people in FACTS are now getting it. They're getting what record keeping and records management is all about. Because we're actually shrinking very rapidly. We're 10,000 people at the moment. Within a year and a half, we'll be 4,000 people. There's an enormous program of retention and archiving. Where ADICs, the entire ADIC TRIM will probably become a legacy database. So my thanks to Sarah. We've worked very closely. You've been very patient with us. We've thrown some very curly questions at you. Our FACTS is now a lot better than where it was. About a year ago, I was speaking to Jenny Stapleton, which is part of State Records, on some archiving matters, and I had to also report that we were running out of TRIM licenses. For the first time ever in an agency, I felt it was necessary for the then State Records to be aware that we were facing an issue. Not that we didn't have enough people using TRIM, but we were actually having a problem providing enough licenses for people to use TRIM. A lot of people were coming on board very fast in less than a two-year period. So thank you very much to One TRIM. It was possible to do. No one thought this could ever, ever, ever happen. It's happened as of 3 days ago. I'd like to hand back to the good doctor.
Thanks, Michael. So just a couple of things that we focused on the way through. We're concerned the business wouldn't be supportive of the change, and we've talked about how we manage that through governance, engagement, comms and training. Data loss or corruption during migration, we really managed that very, very rigorously. We took endless copies. We always took a copy before we touched the data set on a weekend and then afterwards. In addition to that, we never touched the prod data set for migration. We took a copy, we moved it to a config environment, we migrated from that. So the prod remained in place with all of the backups in place. In addition to that, we took a copy prior to the migration of the full data set, the final Delta migration on a Friday, and moved it to GRR to keep in perpetuity. Security of records we managed ruthlessly. System availability, I could talk endlessly about how we managed that, but I am running out of time. Poor estimate of scheduling costs, we did well there. And a low user adoption or acceptance. Again, the steering committee, the engagement, absolutely crucial. In terms of credits, I cannot tell you how important the staff were, how helpful they were, and how important it is for managers to lead. Everywhere in FACS, we had enormous support and assistance, and that's why you know, the team was able to deliver it. So thanks, folks.